insubstantial figures seething, simmering with death, their faces churned with steaming, shifting shadows that conjoined into glowing red eyes set in inky faces, hot tongues aflame alive with hate, glowering out from eternal light. Bumps rippled and tingled across the backs of his shoulders. When he had been in the spirit house and felt the squealing on the other side of the door, when he had sensed the man about to kill Chandelin, and when he had first encountered the sisters, he had felt an overwhelming, inexplicable sense of danger. He felt that danger now. There wasn't the slightest doubt in his mind that these things were part of the magic of this valley, and that that magic had at last found an intruder. Him.
Verna!
He screamed. She scowled at him. I told you, Richard, I am to be addressed as Sister Verna. Is that what you do to your charges? Hurt them with your power? She looked startled. But I, is this your eternal paradise? Quarreling with people, hurting them? He rushed to his knees, eyeing the drifting forms about them. Sister, we have to get out of here. I wish to stay with him. I have found my bliss. This is your idea of paradise? Giving pain? Answer me, Sister Verna. Is that what your creator wishes of you, to hurt the people you are responsible for? She gaped at him, quickness suddenly coming to her movements as she rushed to him. Did I hurt you? She gripped his shoulders. Oh, child, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. He came the rest of the way to his feet and shook her. Sister, we have to get out of here. I don't know how. Tell me how to get out of here before it's too late. But I wish to stay. Look around, Sister Verna. What do you see? She jerked her head woodenly about, from one dark form to another, then to him. Richard? Richard angrily pointed skyward. Look, sister, that's not the creator, it's the keeper. She peered where he directed. With a gasp, her fingers flew to her mouth. The red glow in the eyes of one of the dark shifting forms intensified into burning embers. The sense of danger flamed through Richard's very soul. The sword was out in a blink. The vaporous wraith solidified into solid bone and muscle, claws and fangs, into a frightening beast covered with a dark, cracked, leathery hide, dappled with hideous, suppurating sores. It descended upon him in a terrifying rush. With the sword gripped in both hands, Richard screamed with unleashed fury, driving the sword through the beast's chest as it rushed at him. Soft flesh and hard bone hissed at contact with the blade. The monster slid from the sword and hit the ground like a bucket of slop, its hide not entirely able to contain its contents. A drop of blood splattered on Richard's arm, burning through his shirt and into his flesh. From the inside, the beast boiled and frothed. Worms wriggled from the abscessed sores. Sister Verna stared wide-eyed at the bubbling, smoking mass. He grabbed her curly hair in his fist and twisted her head to look at the forms that were closing in. Is this your idea of paradise? Look! Look at them! He dragged her backward with him as the dark, watery blood running from the beast ignited, sending acrid, oily black smoke curling from the flames. Richard halted when he remembered what she had told him before, about backing into worse danger. He smelled burning flesh and, realizing it was his own, spat on the painful, smoking spot of the beast's blood on his arm. He took in a quick sweep of the area. There were more of the forms behind. Another of them solidified into a beast, this time with cloven hooves and a broad snout. Razor-sharp tusks sprouted, growing into long, curved weapons. Snorting, it charged them. Richard drove his sword downward through the thing's skull as it tried to gore him. With a squeal, the beast collapsed heavily. By the time the bulky body hit the ground, it had mutated to a writhing mass of snakes. They tumbled and rolled as they hit, the tangled pile of them wriggling apart. Hundreds of hooded red eyes glowered up at him. Red tongues flicked the air as the yellow and black banded bodies slithered toward the two of them. Richard didn't think they were mere incorporeal illusions. The place on his arm, where the drop of blood had splattered, burned painfully. The snakes hissed. Some coiled to strike, revealing dripping fangs.
Richard, we have to get out of here. Come, child.
They turned and ran, the floating red-eyed forms following. Richard felt the thick air as he went through. The air around him sparkled. Sister Verna cried out. He turned to see her on the ground before the snakes. She sprang to her feet and tried again, but could not pass through. To her, the air was solid.
She stood silently a moment, going calm. She clasped her hands.
Richard, I am trapped in this spell. I cannot leave it. It is me the spell captured and recognizes. It is too late for me. Save yourself. Run. Without me, you may have a chance. Hurry. Go.
There seemed to be a lot more snakes than Richard had seen at first. The ground was alive with them. They were surrounding him. He struck, as they did, and beheaded three that came too close. The headless bodies writhed and then disassembled into hundreds of huge, glossy, black and brown banded bugs. They skittered in every direction. Some ran up his pant leg. He frantically shook his legs, trying to get them out. Each bite felt like a hot coal on his flesh. He stomped his feet to get them off. From the ground where he had killed the snakes, more of the bugs poured out, their hard-shelled bodies tumbling over each other, rustling like the sound of dry leaves blowing across parched earth. Dancing among the clicking bugs and between the squirming snakes, he stepped back into the sparkling air.
Without you, I don't have a chance. You're coming with me.
He enfolded her in his arms and threw himself sword first at the sparkling barrier. The wall seemed hard at first, but then the air about them exploded in glittering flashes. Lines of light like crazed glass shot in every direction. The air erupted in a burst of sparkles and a crack of thunder. The darting sparkles slowed and then drifted to earth, like fat flakes of snow, their light extinguishing when they touched the ground. The two of them moved past the vanished barrier, free of the spell. The dark forms followed. The snakes followed. Bugs popped and crunched under his boots. Richard's grip tightened on the sword.
Let's get out of here.
She took two strides and then froze.
What's wrong?
I can't feel the way, she whispered.
Richard, I can't feel the gaps.
She turned to him.
Do you feel anything?
He shook his head.
Try, Richard. Try to feel where there is less danger.
He stomped his feet to knock the bugs off his legs and swiped one of them that had made it to his face. Snakes were still pouring from the ground where the monster had fallen. They boiled up like water from a spring.
I can't. I feel danger all about. It's the same everywhere. Which way?
She clutched her skirt in a fist.
I don't know.
Richard heard a scream. The familiar voice wrenched his attention before he could stop himself. Kaelin was standing where the snakes poured from the ground. They slithered up and over her, as if she were a rock in a living stream of snakes. She held her arms out to him.
Richard, help me. You said you would love me always. Please, Richard, don't leave me to this. Help me.
His own voice came in a shaky whisper.
Sister Verna, what do you see?
Jedediah, she answered quietly. There are snakes all over him. He wants my help. May the Creator have mercy on us.
Why should he start now?
Do not speak blasphemy.
He forced himself to turn from the vision. Gripping the sister's arm, he led her away. They sidestepped as they watched the forms drifting around them. They avoided the snakes, but it was impossible not to step on the huge bugs. He knew that moving anywhere without knowing where to go could be more dangerous than standing still, now that the magic had found them. Even so, he couldn't make his feet stop. Finally, they reached ground that was clear of snakes and bugs for the moment.
We're running out of time. Do you feel anything yet? Do you feel the way yet?
Nothing. I'm sorry, Richard. I have failed in my duty, failed the Creator. I've killed us both.
Not yet.
Richard whistled for the horses. They came at a trot, ignored by the dark forms. Bonnie nuzzled her head against him, forcing him back a step. Sister Verna took up the lead line and started leading Jessup away.
No!
Richard leapt up onto Bonnie. He swatted two clicking bugs from his pant leg.
Mount up! Hurry!
Sister Verna stared at him.
Richard, we can't ride the horses. I told you that. They are just dumb animals. They will be spooked and take us into a storm of spells. We can't control them without bits.
Sister, you told me you read The Adventures of Bonnie Day. Do you remember when the three heroes were taking the injured people to safety, and they came to the Poison River that couldn't be crossed? What did they say?
They said that the people just had to have faith that it could be done.
Bonnie, Geraldine, and Jessup led them across the river. Have faith, sister. Mount up. Hurry.
You want me to do something I know will get us killed because of some fool thing you read in a book? We must walk.
Bonnie tossed her head and danced about. Richard took up the slack and the reins to keep her in place.
You don't know the way. I don't know the way. If we stay, we die. Then what good is riding going to do? She had to give a sharp tug to keep Jessup still. He was roused by Bonnie's excitement. Sister, what have the horses been doing all day whenever we let them?
Browsing on grass that isn't there. They're having visions.
Are they? Do you know that? What if what we're seeing is the illusion? Maybe they see what's really there. Now let's go. The dark forms were closer, their eyes glowing a brighter red. Sister Verna glanced at them and pulled herself up onto the saddle. But
have a little faith, sister.
Bonnie pranced sideways, eager to be off. I promised you I would save you, and I intend to. I'll lead. Don't hold back. Richard gave his horse a sharp kick in the ribs with his heels while shouting the command. She leapt out into a dead run. The other two horses sprang to follow. He leaned forward over Bonnie's withers as she stretched into the gallop. He let her have free rein without giving her any hint of direction. He focused on her ears instead of what lay ahead, not wanting to influence her.
Richard! Sister Verna screamed from behind. In the name of the Creator, watch where you're going! Don't you see what you're leading that horse into?
I'm not leading her, he called out over the sound of thundering hooves. She is picking her own course. The sister galloped up beside him, her eyebrows knit together in fury.
Are you insane? Look at where you're headed.
Richard snatched a glance. They were rushing headlong for the edge of a cliff. Close your eyes, sister.
Have you lost your...
Close your eyes, it's a vision. A vision of fear we all have in common, falling, just like when we both saw snakes.
The snakes were real. If you're wrong, we will be killed.
Close your eyes. If it's really there, the horses won't run over the edge of a cliff. He hoped he was right about that.
Unless it's really there, and the magic shows them a vision of flat ground so as to kill us.
If we stay, we die. We have no choice. He heard a growled curse from her as she hauled in on her left rein, trying to turn her horse, but Jessup stayed with Bonnie. Bonnie was leading. Jessup and Geraldine wouldn't leave her.
I told you destroying those bits was foolish. We can't control them. They're running away with us.
I told you I would save you. Destroying those bits is what will save you. My eyes are closed. If you want to live, close yours. Sister Verna was silent as the three horses thundered on. Richard's eyes were squeezed shut. When he judged they should be at the brink, he held his breath. He prayed that the good spirits would be with him this time. His legs tingled in anticipation of plummeting over a cliff. He tried not to think of what it would be like on the way down. Shared fear. That's all it was. He realized he was holding Bonnie's mane in a death grip. He relaxed his fingers but kept his eyes closed. The plunge didn't come. The three horses galloped on. He did nothing to slow them, but let them run as they would. They were in a frisky mood from grazing all day, and he could tell that they were enjoying the run. They were running for the sheer joy of it. After a time, Richard realized that the sound of their hooves was changing. It wasn't as sharp. It had grown softer.
Richard, we're out of the valley.
He looked back over his shoulder to see the wisp of dark storm clouds boiling at the edge of the horizon. The golden sun hung low in the sky over the grassy, undulating ground beneath them. Their horses slowed to a canter.
Are you sure? Are you sure we're away from it?
She nodded.
This is the old world. I know this place.
But it could still be an illusion to give us confidence and trap us before we're clear.
Must you always question what I tell you? I can feel it with my Han. This is no illusion. We are safely out of the valley and away from its magic. It cannot reach us now.
Richard wondered briefly if she could still be an illusion, but he, too, sensed that the danger was no longer there. He leaned forward and gave Bonnie's warm neck a big hug. The immense hills they were entering were barren of trees, covered with clumps of grass and wildflowers, the low places sprinkled throughout with sandy-colored rocks. The sun shined warmly, but it no longer scorched the land. Richard laughed into the wind at his face. He grinned at Sister Verna, but she wasn't smiling. Her brow was creased with a scowl as she scanned the sweep of hills before them.
Wipe that grin off your face, she snapped.
I'm just happy we made it. I'm happy you're alive, sister.
If you had any idea how angry I am with you right now, Richard, you would not be quite so pleased I am still with you. Take this advice seriously. You would be doing yourself a great favor right now if you kept that tongue of yours still.
He could only shake his head.
Chapter 33.
You must cut off my arm.
Zed drew the sleeve of the sky-blue satin robe down her arm, covering the wound that wouldn't heal, and the faint green glow of her flesh.
I'm not cutting off your arm, Addie. How many times do I have to tell you?
He set the cut glass lamp back on the side table inlaid with silver worked in floral patterns, next to the tray of brown bread and half-eaten lamb stew, and strolled across the carpets to draw the heavy embroidered curtains back a bit with a thin finger. He peered, without seeing, out the frost-laced window at the dark street. The glow from the fire in the outer room cast a warm, dim light through the open double doors. The rooms were fairly quiet, considering the size of the crowd down in the dining room. The ram's horn did a bustling business despite it being the dead of winter, or perhaps because of it. The open road was no place to sleep in this cold and snow, and trade couldn't stop simply because of the season. Merchants, drivers, and travelers of every sort filled this inn, as well as all the others in Penvero. He and Addie had been lucky to find lodging, or perhaps the innkeeper had been the lucky one, lucky that someone would come along who was willing to pay the outrageous price he asked for his finest rooms. But the price of the rooms did not concern Zed. Producing the required price in gold was no problem for a wizard of the first order. He had real problems, though. The gash where the skrin had cut Addie with its claws wasn't healing. In fact, it was getting worse. And it would do no good trying to use more magic to cure the wound. Magic was the trouble.
Listen to me, old man.
Addie levered herself up in the bed, onto one elbow.
It be the only way to stop it. You have tried, and I do not fault your efforts. But if we don't stop it, I will die. What be one arm compared to my life? If you do not have the courage, then give me a knife. I can do the work myself.
He scowled over his shoulder.
Of that, dear lady, I have no doubt. But it would do no good, I'm afraid. What do you mean?
She asked in a low rasp. He plucked a cold chunk of lamb from the gold-rimmed bowl and popped it in his mouth before he hiked his lavish robes up a bit and sat on the edge of the bed. He took up her good hand as he chewed. It seemed thin and frail. But he knew her to be more the stuff of iron.
Addie, do you know anyone with knowledge of this sort of taint?
She ignored his question.
Why do you say it will do no good?
Zed patted her hand.
Answer the question. Do you know anyone who would know anything about this? I would have to think on it some, but I do not think there be anyone still alive who would have such knowledge. You be a wizard. Who would know better than you? Wizards be healers.
She took back her hand.
And what do you mean cutting off the arm would do no good?
She was silent a moment, and then her eyes widened.
You mean it be too late?
Zed stood and turned away from her. He put a hand on his bony hip as he considered the options. There was not much to consider.
Think on it, Addie, and do so with haste. This is beyond my knowledge, and it is serious.
He heard the bed squeak as Addie sank back down onto the pillows. She released a tired sigh.
Then I be dead. At least my spirit will be with my Pell at last. You must go on now. Do not waste any more time. I have already slowed you too much. Been in this bed too many days. You must get to Adendrill. Please, Ed, don't let me be responsible for what will happen if you don't get to Adendrill. Go help Richard and leave me to my end. Addie, please do as I ask and think. Who would be able to help us?
Too late, he realized he had just made a mistake. He winced and waited for what he knew was coming. He heard the bed spring squeak again.
Us? I simply mean...
She snatched the sleeve of his fine robes and spun him around. Her brow was set in a serious scowl. She gave a firm tug, forcing him to sit on the bed next to her. Her eyes seemed more pink than white in the lamplight. Yet he could see the dim haze of green in them.
Us,
she repeated. This time it came out in a growling rasp.
And you complain about the small secrets a sorceress would choose to keep to herself? Out with it, or I will make you sorry you dragged me along with you.
Zed gave a tired sigh. It was just as well. He couldn't keep it from her much longer anyway. He drew the dark sleeve of his robe up his arm. The flesh of his upper arm, in the same place where her arm had been cut,
was blotched with cloudy black circles about the size of gold coins and had the same faint green glow as her arm. She stared at it without reaction.
Wizards use the magic of empathy to cure people. We take the pain and the essence of the discordance, the sickness or injury, into ourselves. We have passed the test of pain, so in this, as in other things, we are able to endure what we take from another. We use the gift to sustain us, and to give strength to the person, allowing the magic to cure what is out of order. The harmony within us corrects the disharmony. Sickness and injury is an aberration, and the magic restores the flows of power in a person to what it is intended to be. He stroked her hand. Within limits, of course. We are not the hand of creation, but from it we have the gift to use when it is appropriate. But why be your arm like mine? The actual transfer of the sickness or injury is blocked. Only the pain and disharmony of it is taken on, so we may pass strength, healing, and wellness to the one we are helping. He took hold of the silver brocade at the cuff and drew the sleeve back down his arm. Somehow, the taint of the Skryn passed through that barrier. Concern creased her features. Then we must both lose our arms. Zed worked his tongue to wet it. No, I'm afraid that wouldn't help. When I try to cure someone, I can sense where the injury or sickness, the disharmony, lies.
He stood again, turning his back to her.
Though the wound is on your arm, the taint of the Skryn's magic is evident throughout your body.
His voice dropped to a whisper.
It is also throughout me now.
Zed could hear the muffled laughter from down in the dining hall. Merry music seemed to ooze up through the elegant, richly colored carpets. A bard was singing a bawdy tale about a princess masquerading as a serving wench. Her father, and king, had pledged her to a prince she loathed. After having exposed the suitor as a scoundrel and greedy opportunist, she found that despite having to endure her bottom being pinched, she preferred the occupation of serving wench to that of princess, and went on to live a life of singing and dancing. The crowd roared their approval, thumping their mugs in time with the tune. Addie's voice came softly from behind him.
We be in a great deal of trouble, old man.
He nodded absently.
Indeed. I be sorry, Zed. Forgive me for what I have brought upon us.
He dismissed her regrets with a wave of his hand.
What's done is done. It's not your fault, dear lady. If anything, it's mine for not thinking before I used magic on this. The price of using your heart before using your head.
The price, too, for violating the wizard's second rule, he thought, but did not voice it. The heavy folds of his robe swirled around him as he turned back to face her.
Addie, think. There must be someone who would know about this taint, someone who knows about the Skryn. Is there anyone you visited when searching knowledge of the underworld who would know something? Even if it's just a little, it might give me the clue I need to rid us of this.
Her weight settled deeper into the pillow as she frowned in thought. Finally, her head rolled from side to side.
When I visited the women with the gift, I be young. They be old, or at least older than I. They would all be dead by now.
Zed stepped closer.
Did any have daughters? Daughters with the gift?
Addie's eyes came to his. Her eyebrows lifted, and a smile grew on her finely wrinkled face.
Yes. One who taught me some of the most important things about the Skryn had daughters.
She propped herself up on her good elbow.
3 daughters.
Her grin grew.
They all had the gift. They be little at the time, but they had the gift. They would not be nearly as old as I. If their mother lived long enough, she would have taught them what she knew. That be the way of a sorceress.
Despite the dull ache of a foreign magic in his bones, Zed's step was lively with excitement.
Then we must go to them. Where are they?
Addie winced as she sank back down on the pillows. She drew the blanket up to her chest.
Nicobarisi. They be in a remote part of Nicobarisi. Bags!
Zed let out a sigh. That's a long way in the wrong direction. He stroked a thumb and finger down opposite sides of his smooth jaw.
Can you think of anyone else?
Addie whispered to herself as one at a time she lifted open fingers of a closed hand.
Sons? She muttered. She only had sons.
She lifted open another finger.
No, she didn't know anything of the Skryn.
Finally, she lifted open the last finger.
No children.
Her hands fell limp to her sides.
I'd be sorry, Zed. The three sisters be the only ones who might know something, and they be in Nicobarisi.
And this woman, their mother? Where did she learn these things? Maybe we could go there.
Addie smoothed the blanket against her stomach. Her hand slipped away to rest at her side.
The light only knows. The only place I know we can go to seek answers be Nicobarisi.
Zed pointed a bony finger skyward.
Then we go to Nicobarisi.
Addie looked at him dubiously.
Zed, there be blood of the fold in Nicobarisi. My name be remembered there, and not remembered fondly.
That was an awfully long time ago, Addie, 2 kings ago.
Time means nothing to the blood.
He rubbed his chin as he thought.
Well, no one knows who we are. We've been hiding our identity to remain out of the Keeper's sight. We will simply continue to be 2 wealthy travelers.
He scowled at her.
I'm already wearing this ridiculous outfit.
The lavish robes they both wore had been her idea, and not one he enjoyed. Addie shrugged.
It would appear we have no choice. What must be done must be done.
She grunted with the effort of sitting up in the bed.
We must be on our way.
Zed waved his hand dismissively.
You are weak and need rest. I will secure us transportation. It's too difficult to ride horseback anymore. I'll hire us a coach, or something.
He lifted an eyebrow as he gave her a sly smile.
After all, if we're going to wear these garish outfits and feign being wealthy travelers, it would be best to play the part with a coach.
She watched as he scrutinized himself in front of the tall standing mirror. He held the full robes out, examining their volume. The robe was a heavy maroon fabric with black sleeves and cowled shoulders. The cuffs of the sleeves had 3 rows of silver brocade. Around the neck and down the front were bands of gold brocade woven in a coarser design. The waist was held with a flashy red satin belt set with a gold buckle. The whole effect was so ostentatious it made him groan inwardly. Well, necessary was necessary. Zed swept his arm across his middle, while bowing dramatically.
How do I look, dear lady?
Addie plucked a slice of brown bread from the tray.
Foolish.
He straightened in a rush and finally shook a finger at her.
May I remind you that you picked it out?
She shrugged.
Revenge. You picked mine. I thought it only fitting to seek redress.
He strode across the expanse of carpets in a huff, muttering that he thought she had gotten the better of the bargain by far.
You get a little rest. I'll see about our transportation.
Addie tore a chunk of bread off with her teeth and spoke around the mouthful as he headed for the door.
Don't forget your hat.
Zed froze with a wince. He spun on the balls of his feet.
Bags, woman. Must I wear the hat, too?
She chewed a moment and then swallowed.
The man who sold us the outfit said it'd be all the rage among noblemen.
Zed forced out a noisy breath and then snatched the limp, red hat off the marble tabletop beside the double doors to the outer room. He plopped it atop his wavy white hair.
Better.
The feather be crooked.
He clenched his fists. At last he reached up and rearranged the floppy hat, straightening the long peacock feather.
Happy?
She smiled at his expense, he presumed.
Zed, I said you look foolish only because you be such a handsome man that the fancy clothes look silly in trying to improve upon perfection.
A grin stole back onto his face. He gave another quick bow.
Why, thank you, madame.
She pulled a piece of bread in half.
And Zed, be careful.
He cocked his head with a questioning frown.
Masquerading in that outfit, like the princess in the song, you may get your bottom pinched.
Zed gave her a mischievous wink.
I won't let any stray wench trespass on your territory.
He canted his hat to a jaunty angle and, humming a merry tune, swept through the doors.
A cane, he thought. Perhaps he should have a cane, an ornate one, of course.
It seemed to him that a gentleman should have a proper cane.
Chapter 34. Warm air ascended the stairs from the dining room along with the buzz of the packed room. The aroma of roasting meats drifted in from the kitchen to mix pleasantly with the sweet tang of pipe smoke. Zed rubbed his stomach as he descended the stairs, wondering if he might spare the time to sample a plate. On the landing sat a tall basket holding three canes. Zed pulled the most ornate, a straight black cane with an elaborate head worked in silver, from the basket. He tapped the flamboyant cane on the wood landing, testing its length and heft. Seemed a tad heavy, he thought, but it would do as a proper accessory. The proprietor, Master Hillman, a rotund man with his white shirt sleeves rolled up above his dimpled elbows and wearing a sparkling white apron, spied him as he reached the bottom of the steps and immediately rushed across the room, shoving men out of his way. The man's round pink cheeks plumped out farther as his small mouth spread with a familiar grin.
"Master Ribnick, so good to see you again!"
Zed almost turned to see to whom the man was speaking before he remembered that was the name he had given. He had told the innkeeper that his name was Reuben Ribnick, and had given Addie's name as Elda, saying she was his wife. Zed had always favored the name Reuben. Reuben. He rolled the sound pleasantly through his mind. Reuben.
"Please, Master Hillman, call me Reuben."
The man's head bobbed.
"Of course, Master Ribnick, of course."
Zed held out the cane.
"I find I have need of a cane of late. Could I convince you to part with this one?"
The man opened his arms in a wide gesture.
"For you, Master Ribnick, anything. My nephew makes them, and I let him display them here for my discriminating guests. But this one is special and costly."
He came forward at Zed's skeptical expression, lifting the cane. He leaned close to speak confidentially.
"Let me demonstrate, Master Ribnick. I don't show this to anyone. Might give them the wrong impression of my establishment, you know. Here, you see? You twist, and here at the silver band, it comes open."
He separated the two parts a few inches to reveal a gleaming blade.
"Nearly 2 feet of Celtic steel. Discreet protection for a gentleman. But I'm not sure that for your simple purposes, you would want such a costly..."
Zed pushed the thin blade away and gave a twist, the finely worked mechanism emitting a soft click as the parts locked together.
"It will do nicely. I like its looks, not too flashy. Add the cost to my tally for the room."
Wealthy gentlemen weren't supposed to ask the price. Master Hillman bowed his head up and down.
"Of course, Master Ribnick, of course. And a fine choice, I might add, quite dashing."
He wiped his clean, meaty hands on the apron's corner and then held an arm out to the room.
"May I offer you a table, Master Ribnick? Let me clear a table for you. I will have someone move. Let me see to it."
"No, no,"
Zed gestured with his new cane.
"That empty one in the corner near the kitchen will do splendidly."
The man looked with worry to where Zed had pointed.
"There? Oh, no, sir, please. Let me get you a better table, perhaps near the bard. You would like to hear a lively tune, I'm sure. He knows any tune you could name. Let me know your favorite, and I will have him play it for you."
Zed leaned close and gave the man a wink.
"I much prefer the wonderful aromas coming from your kitchen to the singing."
Master Hillman beamed with pride and then swept his arm in the direction of the empty table, ushering Zed toward it.
"You do me such honor, Master Ribnick. I have never had anyone swoon over my cooking as you do. Let me give you a plate."
"Reuben, please remember. And I would be delighted to sample a slice of that roast I smell."
"Yes, Master Ribnick, of course."
Wringing the corner of his apron, he leaned over the table as Zed sat against the wall.
"How is Mistress Ribnick? I hope she is feeling better. I pray for her every day."
Zed sighed.
"Much the same, I'm afraid."
Oh, dear, I'm so sorry. I'll continue to pray for her."
He started through the kitchen door.
"Let me get you that plate of roast."
Zed leaned his new cane against the wall and removed his hat after the man had left, tossing it on the table. The balding bard sat on a stool on a small platform, hunched over his lute as if permanently deformed around it, strumming with vigor and singing a spirited song about the adventures of a wagon driver.
his journey along bad roads from one bad town to another with bad food and worse women, and how he loved the challenge of steep hills and twisting passes, driving rain and blinding snow. Zed watched one man, alone in a booth against the wall across the room, roll his eyes and shake his head as he listened to one improbable adventure after another. A whip lay in a neat coil on the table before him. Other men at tables thought the song a proper tale and thumped their mugs as they sang along. Some of the drunker men tried to pinch the smiling serving girls that swept past, but caught only air. At other tables sat nattily dressed men and women, probably merchants and their wives, talking among themselves and ignoring the singing. Fashionable nobility, wearing gleaming swords, sat at a few tables off to the quieter side of the room. In an empty area between the bard and the lone man in the booth, couples danced. Some were serving girls and men who had paid them for the turn. Zed noted with pique that while there were many men with hats, all the hats looked to be functional, and none were embellished with a feather. Zed reached into a pocket to count the gold coins. 2. He sighed. It was expensive playing the part of the wealthy. He didn't know how even the wealthy could afford it. Well, he would just have to do something about that if he was to get transportation all the way to Nicobarisi. He couldn't have Addie riding that horse anymore. She was too weak. Springing on light feet, Master Hillman swooped through the kitchen door. He set a gold-rimmed white plate heaped with roasted lamb in front of Zed, pausing before he straightened to return a finger to each edge of the plate and turn it just so. Quickly producing a clean towel, he buffed a spot off the tabletop. Zed decided that although he was hungry, he had better eat carefully, lest Master Hillman whisk out to wipe his chin for him.
"May I bring you a mug of ale, Master Ribnik? On the house?"
"Please call me Reuben. That's my name. A pot of tea would be splendid."
"Of course, Master Ribnik, of course. Anything else I could do besides the pot of tea?"
Zed leaned a little towards the center of the table. Master Hillman did the same.
"What's the current gold-to-silver exchange ratio?"
40.55 to 1,
he answered, ticking the numbers off without hesitation. He cleared his throat.
"I believe. At least, that's what I seem to remember."
He smiled apologetically.
"I don't keep track, but that's what I believe it is. 40.55 to 1. Yes, I think that's right."
Zed made a show of considering this. At last, he pulled out one of his 2 gold coins and slid it with one finger across the table toward the proprietor.
"I seem to be short of smaller coinage. If you would be so kind, could you exchange this for me? And I would like it divided into 2 purses. From one, take 1 silver and exchange it for copper, and put that in a 3rd purse. And please keep any odd bits for the house."
Master Hillman gave 2 quick, deep bows.
"Of course, Master Ribnik, of course, and thank you."
He swept the coin off the table so fast Zed could scarcely see it go. After he left, Zed dug into the roast lamb, watching the people and listening to the singing as he chewed. Near the end of the meal, Master Hillman was back, placing his broad, round back between Zed and the crowd. He set 2 small purses on the table.
"The silver, Master Ribnik, 19 in the light brown one and 20 in the dark."
Zed slipped them into his robes as the other set a heavier green purse down, sliding it across the table.
"And the copper in this."
Zed smiled his thanks.
"And the tea?"
The big man slapped his forehead.
"Forgive me. In handling the exchange, I forgot."
One of the noblemen was waving a hand, trying to get his attention. He snagged the arm of a serving girl coming from the kitchen with a tray of mugs.
"Julie, fetch Master Ribnik a pot of tea, and quickly, dear."
She gave Zed a smile and a nod before rushing on with her tray. Smiling, Hillman turned back.
"Julie will see to it, Master Ribnik. If there is anything else I can do, please ask."
"Why, yes. You could call me Reuben."
Master Hillman chuckled absently and nodded.
"Of course, Master Ribnik, of course."
He rushed off toward the nobleman. Zed cut another piece of lamb and stabbed it with his fork. He liked the name Reuben. He shouldn't have told the man any more of it than that. While he pulled the meat off the tines with his teeth, he watched Julie cross the room, weaving between the crowded tables. He chewed as he watched her plunk down mugs around a table of raucous men all wearing long coats. As she set the last one before the last man, he said something to her. She had to lean over to hear above the din. The men suddenly burst into laughter. Julie straightened and thumped the man on the head with her tray. As she strutted away, he pinched her. She yelped, but hurried on. As she went past Zed's table, she leaned toward him and smiled. "I'll be getting your tea for you right now, Master Ribnik."
"It's Reuben."
He flicked a finger toward the table of noisy men.
"I saw what happened. Do you have to put up with that all the time?"
"Oh, that's just Oscar. He's harmless for the most part. But he has the foulest mouth I've ever heard, and I've heard my share. Sometimes I wish that, when he opened his mouth to spew some of his filthy talk at me, he'd get hiccups instead."
She huffed a wisp of hair back off her face. "And now he wants another mug. I'm sorry, I talk too much. I'll get your tea, Master Rib."
"Reuben."
"Reuben."
She gave him a pretty smile before hurrying off. Eating while he waited, Zed watched the table of noisy men. A small wish. What could it hurt? Julie returned with the tea and a cup. As she set them on the table, Zed crooked his finger, urging her to bend closer. She leaned over, tightening the apron strings behind her back as she did.
"Yes, Reuben?"
The wizard gently touched a finger to the underside of her chin.
"You are a very lovely woman, Julie. Oscar shouldn't speak to you in foul language or touch you again."
His voice lowered to a slow, powerful whisper that almost seemed to make the air sparkle.
"When you give him his ale, speak his name and look him in the eyes, as I look into yours now, and you shall have your wish as you have spoken it to me, but you won't remember asking it, or that I have granted it."
Julie blinked as she straightened.
"I'm sorry, Reuben, what did you say?"
Zed smiled.
"I said thank you for the tea, and I asked if anyone here has a team of horses and perhaps a carriage for hire."
She blinked again.
"Oh, well."
She looked around as she pulled her bottom lip through her teeth.
"Half the men in here, well, half the men who aren't dressed as fine as you, are drivers. Some hire out. Some haul freight and are regulars just passing through."
She pointed at a few tables.
"They and they might hire out, if you can sober them up."
Zed thanked her, and she went to get the ale. He watched as she carried it back across the room and set it in front of Oscar. He leered up at her with a drunken grin. She stared into his eyes. Zed saw her lips speak his name. Oscar opened his mouth to speak, but hiccuped instead. A bubble floated from his mouth, up into the air. It popped. Everyone at the table erupted in laughter. Zed's brow pulled together in a frown as he watched.
"That's odd," he thought.
Every time Oscar opened his mouth to speak to Julie, he hiccuped, and bubbles floated up. The men roared with laughter, accusing her of soaping his ale. They all agreed that if she had, it would serve him right. She left the men to their laughter when the lone man in the booth caught her attention. She nodded after he asked for something and then headed for the kitchen. Julie paused at Zed's table, giving a nod back toward the lone man.
"He might have a team. He smells more like a horse than a man," she giggled. "That wasn't kind. Forgive me. It's just that I can't get him to spend any money on ale. He wants me to bring him some tea."
"I have more than I can drink. I'll go share mine with him."
He winked at her.
"Save you a trip?"
"Thanks, Reuben. Here's another cup, then."
Zed put the last large piece of roast in his mouth as he surveyed the room. The men had quieted down, and Oscar had stopped hiccuping as they all listened to the bard singing a sad song about a man who had lost his love. Zed picked up the teapot and cups and started from his table. He cursed under his breath when he remembered his hat and swept it up, noticing the cane and snatching that up, too. He deliberately passed close to Oscar, looking him over carefully. He couldn't figure out why he had hiccuped bubbles. Zed gave a mental shrug. The man seemed normal enough now, if a little too drunk. The wizard paused next to the booth with the single man. He held up the pot and cups.
"I have more tea than I can drink. Could I share it with you?"
The man watched with a forbidding scowl from under his bushy eyebrows. Zed smiled. The man did indeed smell like a horse. He unfolded his huge arms, slid the coiled whip to the side of the table, and pointed for Zed to sit down before folding his arms again.
"Well, delighted, thank you. I'm Reuben."
Zed tossed his hat on the table and lifted his eyebrows in invitation to reply.
Ahern, he said in a deep, resonant voice. What do you want?
Zed placed his cane between his knees with one hand, and with the other tugged at the heavy robes as he sat on the bench, trying to pull a thick fold from under his bony bottom.
Well, I just wanted to share my tea, Ahern. What do you really want?
Zed poured the man tea.
I thought perhaps you might need some work. Got work.
Zed poured tea for himself.
Really? What sort?
Ahern unfolded his arms and sat back in the booth, appraising his new table companion's eyes and nothing else. He wore a long coat draped around his massive shoulders over a dark green flannel shirt. His thick, mostly gray hair was long enough to nearly cover his ears and looked to be infrequently pestered by a comb. His deeply creased, weather-worn face was splotched with pink, wind-burned patches.
Why do you want to know?
Zed shrugged as he took a sip of tea.
So I can gauge if I can make you a better offer.
Zed, of course, could produce any amount of gold the man could ask for, but judged that not to be the best tack. He took another sip of tea as he waited.
I haul iron from Tristan, down here to the smiths in Penvero. Sometimes over to Winstead. We Keltons make the finest weapons in all the Midlands, you know.
I heard differently.
Ahern's frown darkened. Zed folded his hands over the silver-topped cane.
I hear them to be the finest swords in all three lands, not just the Midlands.
The bard started a new song about a king who lost his voice and had to command by written instruction, but had never allowed any of his subjects to learn to read, and so lost his kingdom, too.
Heavy loads to haul this time of year?
Ahern gave the slightest hint of a smile.
Worse in the spring, in the muck. That's the time we find out who can drive and who can talk.
Zed pushed the full cup a few inches closer to the man.
Steady work.
Ahern finally took the cup.
Enough to keep me fed.
Zed lifted one coil of the braided leather.
I thought you looked to be a man familiar with the use of this.
There's different ways to get effort from a team.
He pointed with his chin in the general direction of the room.
These fools think they get what they want by laying to with the whip.
And you don't?
Ahern shook his head.
I crack my whip to get their attention, to let them know what I want, where to put their feet. My team works for me because I train them to work, not because they get the whip. If I'm in a tight spot, I want a team who understands what I want, not one that jumps when they feel a whip. There are enough gorges strewn with bones of man and horse. Don't want to add mine to the lot.
Sounds like you know your work.
Ahern gestured with his cup to Zed's elaborate robes.
What line of work you in?
Orchards, Zed said, pointing a finger skyward. The finest fruits in all the world, sir.
Ahern grunted.
You mean you own land, and others work to grow you the finest fruits in all the world?
Zed chuckled.
You have it true. Now, anyway, it didn't start that way, though. I started by myself, working, struggling for years, tending my trees day and night, trying to produce the best fruit anyone ever tasted. Many of the trees failed. Many times I failed and went hungry. But I finally was able to do better. I saved every copper and bought more land in years than I could. Planted, tended, picked, hauled, and sold it all by myself. Over time, people came to know my fruit as the best, and I became more successful. In the last few years, I've hired people to tend things for me, but I still keep my hand to the work, so that it lives up to what people know me for. Would you hope for any less success in your work?
Zed sat back, smiling, proud of the story he had just invented on the spot. Ahern held out his cup for more tea.
Where are these orchards?
In Westland. Moved there before the boundary went up.
And why are you here now?
Zed leaned forward, lowering his voice.
Well, you see, my wife is not doing well. We're both old, and now that the boundary is down, she wants to visit her homeland. She knows healers there, who may be able to help her. I'd do anything to help that woman. She's too sick to travel on horseback any longer, what with this weather. So I'd like to hire someone to take us to her healers. I'd pay any price I can afford, to get her there.
Ahern's face softened somewhat.
Sounds a fair enough journey. Where do you be headed?
Nico Parisi.
Ahern slammed his cup down on the table. Some of the tea sloshed out.
What?
He lowered his voice and leaned forward, the table's edge pressing into his husky middle.
It's the dead of winter, man.
Zed ran his finger around the rim of his cup.
I thought you said spring was the worst.
Ahern grunted with a suspicious glare.
That's back northwest, the other side of the Rangshada Mountains. If you came from Westland to go to Nico Parisi, why would you cross the Rangshada first? Now you just have to cross it back again.
Zed was caught off guard and had to scramble to find an answer. At last he did.
I'm from up near Adendrill. We were going to go there for a visit to my homeland before we went in the spring to Nico Parisi. I thought to cross the mountains to the south, then go northeast to Adendrill. But Elda, that's my wife, she took sick, and I decided that, well, it would be better to go see her healers.
You would have been better off to have gone to Nico Parisi first, before you crossed the mountains.
Zed folded his hands over his cane.
So, Ahern, do you know how to undo something done in error, so I may relive my life as you suggest?
Ahern grunted with a laugh.
Guess not.
He thought a moment, finally letting out a tired sigh.
I'll tell you, Reuben, it's a long way. You're asking for trouble. I don't know that I want any part of it.
Zed arched an eyebrow.
Really?
He made a deliberate survey of the room.
Tell me, Ahern, if you find the task so formidable, which of these men here would be up to the job? Which are better drivers than you?
Ahern regarded the crowd with a sour look.
I'm not saying I'm the best there is, but this lot's more boast than brains. Don't think there's one of them that would make it.
Zed shifted irritably on his bench.
Ahern, I think you're simply trying to boost the price.
And I think you're trying to lower it.
Zed let his slightest smile touch his lips.
I don't think it is as difficult a job as you make it.
Ahern's frown returned.
You think it easy?
Zed shrugged.
You drive in the winter now. I simply want you to drive in a different direction, that's all.
Ahern leaned forward, his jaw muscles tightening.
Well, the direction you want to go in is trouble. First of all, there are rumors of civil war in Nico Parisi. Worse, the shortest way, unless you want to spend weeks going to the passes far to the south, is across Galia.
His voice lowered.
There's trouble between Galia and Kelton. I hear tell there's fighting along the border. Keltish towns have been sacked. The people here in Penvero are nervous, what with being so close to the border with Galia. It's all the talk. Going into Galia is sure trouble.
Fighting? Wagging tongues of gossips. The war is ended. The Daharan troops have been called home.
Ahern slowly shook his head.
Not Daharan raids, Galian.
Piffle! Zed snapped. Keltons think it's a Galian attack every time a farmer knocks a lantern over and a barn catches fire. And the Galians see Keltons every time a lamb is taken by wolves. I'd like to have the price of all the arrows that have been shot into shadows.
He shook a finger at the man.
If either Kelton or Galia were to attack the other, the Central Council would have the heads of those who spoke the orders no matter who they were.
He thumped his cane.
It would not be allowed.
Ahern shrank back a little.
I don't know anything about politics and less about those wicked confessors. I just know that going through Galia can get a man shot full of arrows coming out of those shadows. What you want is not as easy as you think.
Zed was tiring of the game. He didn't have the time for this. Something Addy had said was nagging in the back of his mind. Something about light. Deciding to resolve the discussion one way or the other, he drained his tea in one gulp.
Thank you for the conversation, Ahern, but I can see you're not the man able to get me to Nico Parisi.
He rose, reaching for his hat. Ahern laid a big paw on Zed's arm and urged him down. He squirmed forward on his bench.
Look, Reuben, times have been hard. The war with Dahara disrupted trade. Kelton was spared the brunt of the war, but many of our neighbors weren't. It's hard to trade with dead people. There's not as much cargo as there used to be, but we still have more than enough men wanting to haul. You can't blame a fellow for trying to get his best price when an opportunity comes along."
His eyebrows lifted as he leaned in a little more.
"Trying to get the best price for the best fruit, as it were."
"Best fruit, indeed."
Zed waved his hand impatiently toward the room.
"Any one of these men will gladly offer to hire out. Any one of them can offer me a boastful story just as good as yours, as to why they would be the best driver. You're working up to asking top price. That's fair enough. But stop playing games with me, Ahern. I want to know why I should pay it."
With the tip of one thick finger, Ahern slid his cup to the middle of the table, indicating he wanted a refill. Zed smoothed out his sleeves before obliging him. Ahern drew his cup into the protective shroud of his big arms as he leaned in. He glanced around the room. Everyone was watching the bard sing a love song to one of the serving girls. He was holding her hand, singing words of eternal devotion. The girl's face was red. She held her tray behind her back with the other hand as she studied her feet and giggled. Ahern extracted a chain with a silver medallion from under his green flannel shirt.
"The reason I want top price is because of this."
Zed frowned down his nose at the regal image on the medallion.
"That looks to be Galleon."
Ahern gave a single nod.
"In the spring and summer, Dahara laid siege to Ebenicia. The Galleons were slowly being choked to death, and no one would help them. Everyone had troubles of their own with the Daharans, and didn't want a piece of theirs. The people there needed weapons. I took loads of weapons and some badly needed salt up through some of the more isolated passes. The Galleon guard had offered to escort any who would risk the run, but few took the offer. Those back passes are treacherous."
Zed lifted an eyebrow.
"Very noble of you."
"Nothing noble to it. They paid handsomely. I just didn't like to see them folks trapped like that, especially knowing what Daharan soldiers do to those they vanquish. Anyway, I reasoned that some Celtic swords might give them a better chance to defend themselves, that's all. Like I said, we make the best."
Zed lifted a hand from where it was folded over his cane and gestured to the medallion, now back under Ahern's shirt.
"So what is that about?"
"After the siege was lifted, I was called before the Galleon court. Queen Cirilla herself gave this to me. She said I had helped her people defend themselves, and I was always welcome in Galea."
He tapped his chest, where the medallion hung under his shirt.
"This is a royal pass. It says I may go anywhere I wish in Galea, unhindered."
"And so now," Zed said, looking up from under his eyebrows, "you wish to put a price on something that is priceless?"
Ahern's eyes narrowed.
"What I did was a small bit. They bore the brunt of the hardship. I helped those people because they needed help and because I was paid well. I'm not claiming to be a hero. I did it for both reasons. I wouldn't have done it for one alone. Now I have this pass, and if it will help me to make a living, well, I don't see anything wrong with that."
Zed leaned back.
"You're right, Ahern. The Galleons, after all, put a price in gold to your work for them. I shall, too, if I can. Name your price to take us to Nicobarisi."
The teacup looked tiny in Ahern's big hands as he rolled it back and forth.
30 gold, not one less."
Zed arched an eyebrow.
"My, my. Don't we think a lot of ourselves?"
"I can get us there, and that's my price, 30 gold.
20 now. 10 more when you get us to Adendrill."
"Adendrill? You never said anything about Adendrill. I don't want anything to do with Adendrill, with their wizards and confessors. Besides, we'd have to cross the Rang Shaddaa again."
"You will have to cross anyway to come back here. So you cross in the north. It's hardly out of your way. If you don't like the offer, then I'll offer 20 to take us to Nicobarisi, and I'm sure I can find someone there more than willing to take us to Adendrill for the other 10, if we even need carriage after my wife is healed. If you want all 30, then I'll commit to it now, if you agree to take us all the way. That's my offer."
Ahern rolled his cup back and forth.
"All right, to Adendrill. 20 now, 10 in Adendrill."
He pointed a meaty finger in Zed's direction.
"But you have to agree to one condition."
"Such as?"
Ahern's finger moved to point at Zed's red hat.
You can't wear that hat. That feather will spook the horses, sure.
Zed's wrinkly cheeks spread in a grin.
One condition of my own, then.
Ahern cocked his head.
You have to tell my wife that it's your condition.
Ahern grinned back.
Done.
His grin vanished as quickly as it had come.
This isn't going to be an easy journey, Reuben, up into and across those mountains. I have a coach I bought with my earnings from hauling to Ebenezia. I can mount runners to it, make easier going in the deep snow.
He tapped a finger against the side of the cup.
Now, the gold?
The bard's fingers danced across the strings, playing an enthralling tune without words. Practically every toe in the room was moving in time with it, adding a drum-like accompaniment. Zed reached into his robes and put a hand around the two purses of silver coins. He watched the room without saying it. And then the wizard did again that which he had had to do far too often of late. He channeled a warm flow of magic into the bags of silver coins and changed them to gold. But what choice did he have? To fail in this endeavor was to see the world of the living die. He hoped he was not simply providing himself justification for an act he knew was dangerous.
Nothing is ever easy, he muttered under his breath.
What was that?
I said I know it's not easy, this journey.
He plunked the dark brown bag of gold on the table.
This should make it possible. 20 now, as agreed.
Ahern pulled open the draw top and put two big fingers into the bag, counting, while Zed idly watched people enjoying the food and drink and music. He was anxious to be off to Nicobarisi.
This some kind of joke?
Zed brought his attention back to Ahern. With two fingers, the big man drew a coin from the bag and flicked it across the table. The coin spun with a dull color before finally toppling over, making a sound just as dull. Zed stared incredulously. The coin looked just like an ordinary coin, except it was wood instead of gold.
Well...
Ahern had poured the rest of the gold coins into his big mitt and was now letting them tumble back into the purse.
And there are only 18 here. You're too short. I'm not taking wooden coins.
Zed smiled indulgently as he pulled the light brown purse from his robes.
I apologize, Ahern.
He swept the wooden coin from the table.
It would seem I gave you the wrong purse, the one with my lucky coin. I would never give that away, of course. It's more valuable to me than gold.
He peered into his purse. 17. And two of those were wood, too. There should have been 19 altogether. His mind reeled as he tried to make sense of it. Could Master Hillman have tried to short him? No, that would be too clumsy a theft. Besides, to carve a coin from wood, hoping to pass it off as gold, would be witless.
My other two gold?
Oh, yes, yes.
Zed pulled two gold coins from the purse and slid them across the table. Ahern added them to his purse, jerked the drawstring tight, and stuffed the dark brown bag into a pocket.
I'm at your bidding now. When would you like to leave?
The silver coins that were turned to wood instead of gold did not concern the wizard. That could be explained. Somehow. But there were three coins missing, vanished. That could not be explained. That did concern him. Concern him down to the bones in his toes.
I would like to leave as soon as possible at once.
You mean tomorrow?
Zed snatched up his hat.
No, I mean at once.
He glanced at the man's puzzled frown.
My wife. There is no time to waste. She needs to get to her healers.
Ahern shrugged.
Well, I just got back from Tristan. I'll need to catch a little sleep. It's going to be a long, hard run.
Zed reluctantly nodded his acquiescence.
First, I'll put the runners on the coach. That'll take a couple of hours, less if I can get one of these fellows to help me.
Zed thumped his cane.
No! Tell no one what you're doing or where you're going. Don't even tell anyone you're leaving.
He snapped his mouth shut when he saw Ahern's frown and thought he had better say something to ease it.
Those shadows you spoke of. Does no good to let them know where to point an arrow.
Ahern stared down suspiciously as he stood to his full, towering height, drawing his long coat on.
First you talk me into taking you to the accursed land of wizards and confessors, and now this. I think I asked too little.
He flicked the ends of the coat's belt together in a loose knot.
But a bargain is a bargain. I'll get the coat set up and get some provisions together before I snatch a little sleep. I'll meet you back here 3 hours before dawn. We'll be across the border and into Galia before midday tomorrow.
I have a horse at the stables. We might as well take her along. Stop by and fetch her before you come for us.
Zed dismissed the man with an absent wave of his cane.
3 hours before dawn.
His mind was racing in other directions. This was more serious than he had thought. It was imperative that they have help as soon as possible. Maybe the woman in Nicobarisi, who had had the three daughters, had studied somewhere, perhaps someplace closer. Maybe they could find what they needed without going all that way. Time was of the essence. The light only knows, Addie had said, where the woman had learned about the Skryn. The light was a common reference to the gift. It was also an obscure reference to something else entirely. He thumped his cane on the floor. Must Addie always speak in sorceress's riddles? As Ahern headed for the door, the wizard rose and headed for the stairs. Chapter 35. Zed opened the door to be confronted by a haze of smoke that smelled of creosote. The window was opened, letting in icy cold air and letting out the smoke. Addie sat on the bed, wrapped nearly to her neck in a blanket, brushing her straight black and gray jaw-length hair.
What's going on? What happened?
She pointed with the hairbrush.
I be cold. I tried to start a fire.
Zed glanced to the hearth.
You need wood, Addie. You can't have a fire without wood.
He expected a scowl. Instead, it was a look of disquiet.
There be wood. I used magic to try to light the fire from where I be in bed. But there be a big puff of smoke and sparks. I opened the window to let out the smoke. When I looked to the hearth, the logs be gone.
Zed stepped closer to her.
Gone?
She nodded and went back to brushing.
Something be wrong. Wrong with my gift?
Zed stroked a hand down her hair.
I know. I had a similar problem. It must be the taint.
He sat and took the brush from her hand, setting it down.
Addie, what can you tell me about this taint? About the Skryn? We must have answers. I have already told you all I know. The Skryn be force on the cusp between the world of the living and the world of the dead. But why won't the cut heal? Why won't my magic work to heal it? What made the logs disappear when you used magic? Skryn be from both worlds. Do you not see?
She shook her head in frustration.
Skryn be magic. Magic of both worlds. So it can work in both worlds. Additive and subtractive. We be touched by that force. The taint be subtractive. You mean that you think the taint of subtractive magic is corrupting our magic? Our gift?
She nodded.
It be like you have just cleaned ashes from a hearth with your bare hands, and without washing them clean you try to hang up freshly washed white sheets to dry.